This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to the show that walks you through some fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Together with Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, the show tries to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and frameworks, the better to understand how society works. This week, Fuad could not be here, but we have two guests. I have with me Professor Valentine Zubir, from the École Pratique de Haute Études in Paris. And you must correct me, because this is a little more complicated as a name. Yves Tessier-Durfus.
That's right.
Who is a deputy advisor for religious affairs at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in France. And they're here to talk about a very interesting and very relevant topic, which is the idea of tolerance or toleration. You know, some months ago, we actually had an academic, a scholar of the French Protestant philosopher, Pierre Bayle. I don't know if that's, it's important to say that he was a Protestant, but I understand he was, from the 17th century, who wrote a treatise on toleration. This was at a time, I guess, of great turmoil in France between the Catholics and Protestants. And maybe, Professor Valentine, you can tell us a little bit about the development in France of the very idea, the notion that communities of varying faith perhaps need to think about how to live with each other.
Yes, of course, because, you know, we knew in France a terrible religious war during the 16th century between Protestants and Catholics. And to end the war, the king has to invent something to lead the people to coexist peacefully. And fortunately, in the history of France, the king who made this new law of coexistence was a former Protestant, became Catholic. And he gave a law which distinguished between religion and citizenship. And it's very important for the tolerance to grow up, that the citizenship is separate from the religious thinkings.
So from the 17th century, France was grappling with a problem, but its political structure was feudal. It was a monarchy, right, with absolutist powers, I understand, at that point.
Yes, and the Catholicism was the religion of the state.
Right. So you had a monarchy with a particular religion, in this case, one tradition within Christianity, the Catholic Church, having an official position as the state religion, right?
Yes, but it was difficult because there were two minorities in France still, little minorities, but existing minorities, Protestant one and Jewish one. And right, there are no rights. So we have to wait for the French Revolution to give rights for the minorities.
So with the French Revolution comes really the end of, or at least the beginnings of, perhaps a change in political systems for France. And I turn to you, Yves, and I just wanted to ask you, in your thinking about the issue of tolerance in a modern democratic context, how that differs from a feudal system of monarchy, that, you know, where the king might make these decisions and is insulated from popular pressures, whereas democratic governments are precisely legitimized through popular pressure or popular assent?
Well, I will say the concept of tolerance evolved with the French Revolution. It was a major step in our history because, as Valentine said, the rights for the Jews, for example, were for the first time recognized. So it was a major evolution. It means that all different religions could be recognized and live together. This was the system that we had in France during the 19th century, where we had four different religions recognized: Catholic, two Protestants, Calvinist and Lutheran, and the Jewish religions. And at the beginning of the 20th century, the concept of tolerance had a new evolution, because at the end of the 19th century, we saw in the French society a strong opposition against religions. And so at the beginning of the 20th century, it was adopted the law of separation, which is, in fact, we can say a law of tolerance, because it means that the state doesn't recognize any religions. In the same way, it means all religions can live in France.
So no one religion is given preferential treatment, or you don't have a class of religions that are recognized, and then perhaps outside of that, religions that are not yet recognized.
No. Freedom of religion is really complete or total in France with this law.
Can I ask you, Valentin, the development of this idea, and I believe it's called laicité, is it? The
yes,
separation, the idea of separation of state and church, right? Where did it come from? Did it just emerge in the 20th century? Did it have a long period of development? And what fed into the development of that idea?
Historian and sociologist told about a process. It's a laicization process. It became during the French Revolution when religious liberty was given to minorities. And they installed civil marriage, divorce. And during all the 19th century, measures has been taken by several governments to laicize, I don't know, to secularize hospitals, justice, schools, and national assembly, distinguish two spheres, the spiritual one and the political one. And the idea was to free each other, free the state from religious influence, and free the church of the state control.
Now, how long did that process take?
Well, I think one century.
And was there resistance to that? Because I think, when we think of history, there must have been groups or stakeholders that benefited from a particular order who might not have wanted this new order. Was there resistance? And
there
how
was
that happened?
Strong resistance. An intellectual, a French intellectual historian, Émile Poulain, talk about the war of the two France. And who were these two Frances? The first is the Catholic, traditionalist, legitimist, monarchist one. And the second is the leftist, republicanist, and who think that the revolution changed the life of every French. So the country was divided in two parts, quite religious war again, but political one. And the law of separation, the result has been to pacify the society, pacify the debates about religion, intrusion of religion in politics sphere or contrary.
Lisa, I want to ask you, today in contemporary France, are there any pockets of resistance to the idea of separation? People who want to return France to an older sense of identity with nationalism, and the content of that nationalism includes religious identity, or even if it's as vague as something like Christian values, because we know, of course, in Britain, I think David Cameron, the Prime Minister, made this pronouncement that Britain was a Christian nation, and that's an astounding development. And there were intellectuals in Britain who opposed that idea, who came out and said, no, the future of Britain cannot be secured by claiming Christianity as part of the identity of the nation. Where's France in that debate?
That's right, that there is on the white side of our political scene people who wants to emphasize that France is a historical Catholic country. But in fact, nobody, I think, wants to come back before the law of separation. And that's the, I think, the most interesting thing that we can observe today, that all the religious leaders are very happy with this law. In fact, I think the benefits are very strong for them because they are really protected from the political power. They are completely independent and they are very happy with this independence. In 2005, it was the first 100 years after the year, there was a national reflection in France. What do we want to do? Do we need to have a new law or perhaps to think something new? Because, I mean, it's an old law. And in the political leaders and the religious leaders, almost everybody wanted to keep this law. So there is a kind of unanimity. That's why also there is always some pockets of resistance. But I will say this resistance is not from the religious side. It's more people who would like to see the religions be less visible in the society. There is some resistance from this kind of thinkings.
So you're saying that there are people who still see religious symbols in public life in France who want to see less of those symbols. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, there is. But I think it's really a small minority.
Yeah. Now, I also understand, I mean, the 20th century has been a century of migration. France and its colonies in North Africa have produced patterns of migration to France that brought many Muslim and settled Muslim communities who perhaps come with a different sense of the place of religion in public life. I want to ask you, Valentine, when you reflect on history, can history tell us a little about how, you know, changing demographics and the fact that people move and have to interact or encounter each other. What can we draw? What lessons can we draw from this recent encounter in France?
Well, you know, France is a country of immigration for years, and before African immigration, we had European immigration, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, Polish, and so France always been very attractive for immigrants. And these ancient immigrants were all Christians, culturally Christian. So after one or two generation, they still have a strange name, foreign name, but they were completely assimilated.
Like Sarkozy?
Like Sarkozy, absolutely. The second generation only. But the problem with this new, which is not so new by now, immigration, is they have another culture, another religion, and it took more time somehow to integrate, to assimilate. And there's other factors, of course, but this one is one of them.
Now, we're going to come back after this and with more discussion on contemporary France, the history of France, and the development of ideas that have helped or not helped France deal with the complex nature of their societies. You've been listening to Professor Valentine Zuber and Mr. Yves Tessier-Durfil.
Yes.
And myself, Sharad Kutin. This is Night School, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, and Night School continues. We've been speaking to Professor Valentine Zuber. She is a historian at the École Pratique des Hautes Études Paris, which I'm going to ask you to translate very shortly, and also Mr. Yves Tessier-Durfil, Durfil. He is Deputy Advisor for Religious Affairs with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of France. We left off with the question of the changing nature of contemporary French society. As you said, Valentine, it's already been some time since Muslim migrants came to France and have settled there and are now citizens. Of course, Islam is a monotheistic religion, in some sense, is part of that family of religions that shares similar cultural foundations.
Yes.
What do you think, as a historian, the differences that mark, say, Christian religious traditions and evolution over its own sort of political thinking and those that come with the migrants from North Africa and such that have now settled in France? What makes Islam different in the French context, even though it is a monotheistic religion?
I think the question is very complicated. You know, Islam is a new religion in France, but French has a long relation with Muslims since the Middle Age, since the birth of Islam. And you know, the story between Christians and Muslims was a very difficult story with crusades, with invasions of Spain, invasions in Austria, and then all. And France has a particular history with Muslims because Algeria, the big country, has been a colony for 100 years, French colony for 100 years. And when the French were the colonizers of Algeria, the Muslims had no right at all. So we have a very traumatic history between Algeria and France. And I think it's not a surprise if it's so difficult for the immigrants and the generation after to have a good relation with a country who denied them so long before.
Now, I'm now actually going to ask you why the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has an advisor on religious affairs.
I will tell you some words of history because it's important to understand why do we have a religious affairs advisor, because this post was created in 1920. And it's related to the history of the law of separation between the state and the church. At this time, in 1904, the Holy See decided to break the relations, the diplomatic relations.
The Holy See being the Vatican.
The Vatican, yes. Between the relations between France and them. It was very important. They completely disagree. At this time was being drawn up the law of separation. It was adopted just 1 year after. And these diplomatic relations were very old. It's, in fact, the oldest French diplomatic representation. It was founded in the 15th century. After the First World War, all the French society fought together during this war, and it was decided to resume these diplomatic relations. So the government decided to create this post to negotiate the resumption of the diplomatic relations. This was done from 1921, but it was decided to preserve this post just to keep ongoing relations with the Catholic Church. Because at this time, we are still at the beginning of the 20th century, France is mostly a Catholic society with two small religious minorities, Jewish and Protestant. And by the end of the 20th century, the religious landscape in France completely changed, and the role of the religious affairs advisor completely changed also, because by the end of the 20th century, we had six main religions in France: Muslims, Buddhists, and Orthodox Christians also, who founded representative bodies, in national representative bodies. It's interesting to see when they were founded. The Buddhist French Union Federation was founded in 86, the Orthodox Assembly in 97, and the Muslim Council The National Council of Muslim Faith was founded in 2003, which is very recent. But now we have in France various a diversity of interlocutors, of religious leaders. And so we have a lot of discussions with them, but as we are from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we discuss international issues with them. When there is internal affairs, they have discussions with the Ministry of Interior, who is also in charge of relations with the different faiths.
Now, that's fascinating. I could just see a whole spin-off, an entire show about foreign affairs and religion because of the way that current wars and conflicts are being fought or framed. They're being framed as religious conflicts, say, in the Middle East with the Islamic State of Syria and the Levant, isn't it? So, ISIL. So, but I want to come back to you, Valentin. Again, the question is, so we have this history. We have, as you say, this history of trauma, baggage, of colonization. When it comes to the Muslim population, what does history tell us about the possibility of dialogue, the possibility that different faith communities in a political context might in fact reach accommodation or find themselves as equal partners or interlocutors in a discussion? Or are we always seeing a situation where there's a hegemonic force? It's always the dominant community, the Catholic, Christian, Muslim, and they are generous in dealing with minorities, or they're not so generous in dealing with minorities.
But the government?
Yeah, in some sense, the government is also a hegemonic force, right? Mm-hmm. It can establish the ground rules, as it were. You mentioned earlier the question of assimilation. And assimilation and dialogue don't sit so easily together, I think.
Mm-hmm. The dialogue is recommended by the state, but the state never interfere in a religious dialogue. It's the duty of the religions themselves.
I see, but what if they want to make representations to the state? If they want to make certain claims in the state for rights, say, for instance, in a situation where their religious symbols are not being allowed, say, mm-hmm. wearing the burqa or something like that, or you want to wear a cross or I don't know what other Buddhist symbols that might be, the swastika, for instance. Mm-hmm. Don't they have to speak to the state? And does the state recognize them as a body that can be negotiated with or enter into
yes.
dialogue?
But there's not much to negotiate, actually, because the law is very clear. No religious symbols in public institutions, in front of the tribunal, in front of the assembly.
Classrooms,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is very clear. And the second demand of the state is it's forbidden for civil servant to show their religious orientations. So they have to be neutral. The professor in the state school has to be neutral in front of his pupils.
But this is a situation where one ought to be like that. The realities don't necessarily have to match up, right? I mean, that is, you're asked to be neutral. But in a situation where you have small communities, where everybody knows what religion you are because they know who you are and where you go to worship, isn't there always a chance that the rhetoric of the separation of state and church might not live up to the reality, or rather the reality does not live up to the rhetoric of this separation?
I will say there is in French history something very important, I think, perhaps something like French ideology, which is France is a centralized country, and we always had, since the revolution, the idea that we are one society, a unified society with one language, one culture. And the law about the veil in public schools, I think it's the way to say for all the children, I mean, we don't want to see the difference in the public schools. We don't want to see perhaps struggles between a boy from a community and another for another community. We want just all of them to be together with a neutrality. Neutrality, it means also not to show up the religions. The religious origins.
But is it, can I ask you, both of you, you know, we've seen over the last decade or so flare-ups, communal violence in France, you know, and there's a suggestion that despite this apparent equality, the reality that maybe it's a question of class or class combined with ethnic identity and opportunities that might go along with that, right? Lack of access or, you know, all these things that we know actually exist in societies. I mean, inequalities of access.
Of course.
When you don't recognize difference or when you refuse to, and you try to make it invisible, are you in danger of refusing to deal with inequalities that actually exist out there?
I think your analysis is very, very good, because it's the paradox. Everybody is equal, theoretically, but socially it's not. It's not true. And state school was supposed to give the possibility of every child of France to become, to have a better fate with working, meritocracy and so on. And it doesn't work anymore. We see that the state school let the discrimination increase. Mm-hmm. And it's a real crisis, because it's against the ideology, the Republican ideology.
Now, this ideology is very interesting, because I think France is often set up as an example of secularism of an extreme sort. It's kind of a hardline secularist state, you know, because you have other secular states that are much more laissez-faire. They allow a bit of this, a bit of a mix and match. You know, they perhaps concede a little more space to minority communities to express their identities just because they are minorities and such. Is there a concern in France today that maybe they ought to give a little, give to communities a chance to express their religious identity? There's nothing there's nothing wrong or un-French about allowing your religious identity to emerge, that you can still be an equal partner in a dialogue about where society goes. I mean, I think the scholar Jose Casanova has talked about this problem for Europe wanting to see itself as secular, but also unsure about how, if we can let go of its Christian identity and heritage, but also how to deal with religious voices in the secular society, in the public sphere.
Well, I will say, first, the French secularism tried and tries to make equality and neutrality the basis, the principle. But this doesn't mean that religions cannot express their faith, even in the educational system. You see, in France, since 1959, we have a law about private schools, and we can have religious private schools which receive subsidies from the state. This is something that you cannot imagine in the American secular system, where they will not give any money to religious schools. In France, it's not a problem. So it's also a pragmatical way to offer religious diversity. Today, most of these schools, because the Catholic Church is the main religion, most of these private schools subsidized by the government are Catholic, but we can see now that there is more and more Muslims private schools also. So the French secularism has strong principles, but he is also pragmatical in this way.
Dr. Professor Valentin, the trajectory of the idea of laissez-faire and the other notion, multiculturalism, for instance, do you see a convergence? Do they come up from the same root? Conceptually, do you see a family resemblance between the policies of multiculturalism that are practiced in many countries? You were recently in Singapore, and Australia has, and Britain talks about multiculturalism, and the ideology, as it were, of France of the strict separation of church and state.
That's difficult to say because multiculturalism is not a French concept. It's a word, of course, but we hardly use it. But I think the laïcité was necessary because of the pluralization of the society and the equality for every religion, the equality for every individual.
Do you think it would be possible? Is it not possible to talk about multiculturalism within a French context? I mean, is the notion of multiculturalism have no traction? Does it?
No, it's not an attractive concept for French.
Why?
Because it's a. From the revolution, when the assembly, the revolution assembly, gave rights to Jews, a deputy said, "We gave rights for Jews for each individual, but not for the community of the Jews." So the rights in France are individual, and you are. Free, you are equal, but your rights are individuals and not collective.
Fascinating. Last word is I wanted to ask you, where do you think France now, looking out in the world and looking at the different models to deal with difference, is France toying with new ideas? Is it very secure that the path that it's chosen all these centuries is the right path to go on?
Well, no. In fact, our history today is also a European one. And this is something very interesting to see how European Union is creating something new. All the European countries have very different secular system. But, in fact, we can see that a European secular system is going to be slowly created by the decisions of the European Court for Human Rights, which has to decide sometimes, in some cases, what to do in some religious situation. And when the European Court for Human Rights takes a decision, this is for all the European citizens. So we have something new now, the beginning of a new reality, which is perhaps a future of European secularism.
Valentin, we end the show often, almost every time, with a book recommendation. And I'm really interested to know if there is a book about France, about this particular trajectory of the idea of laïcité that we could read to learn from. I mean, just an idea of the struggles to develop this particular thing, or any other book that you think a Malaysian might productively read on the question of tolerance or religion and society?
I would like to signal two. an old one, but very traditional. It's Voltaire's Tolerance Treatise, which is a beautiful book and a plea for tolerance. And the second one, more scholar for scholars, is Charles Taylor, A Secular Age, which explained the different form of secular societies and how it works.
Wonderful. Okay, and Izu, do you have a recommendation for our listeners? Something that they could read around this issue that you think is that excited you in recent times?
I think there is one very interesting and very important book which was written during the 80s by Marcel Gauchet, which is, I don't know how to translate it, Le Désenchantement du Monde, which explains why... He tries to explain why Christianity is the religion which is it's not so
led
easy
to secularism.
Yes, is the religion of secularism. Right. That's very interesting. And as I am a diplomat, I can also mention that there is a book who's going to be published next month about, and there is few books about this, about religion and foreign policy. In fact, in French, this is something new. The scholars didn't write so much about this subject, the importance of religion in international relations.
Fascinating. We look forward to that. I will get in touch with you and get those titles from you. Hopefully they will be translated into English. Thank you so much. I think we always are excited to go beyond the Anglophone world and its cultural products and its books and ideas. There are so many ideas coming out from the rest of the world within and from different, you know, language traditions and philosophical traditions. And it's wonderful for you both to come today and share your thoughts about this particular tradition, the French tradition of separation of church and state, and the discussion over diversity and how to deal with it. We will take questions for you and channel it through. You can. We have a Facebook page. It's BFM Night School, where people can post questions and we'll forward it to the both of you. We also have an email that's bfmnightschool@gmail.com. If you want to pose any questions to Professor Valentin and Mr. Eves, we could take those questions and forward them to them. Hopefully, maybe if you have time, you could answer them. So anyway, thank you again, both of you, for being here. You were listening to Professor Valentine Zuber. She is from a historian with the École Pratique des Hautes Études in Paris. And Mr. Yves Tessier Dufil. He is the Deputy Advisor for Religious Affairs at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in France. I probably mangle both of their names and the institutions they come from, but... Again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Sharad Kutin. You're listening to Night School on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.